Welcome to Real Stories, a show that has honest conversations from the heart. I invite you to sit back, relax, and allow our guests to speak their truth.
Hello, I'm Tanya the Communication Doctor, and welcome to Real Stories. I just want to say, I come from a family where people didn't always speak their truth. And I think it's so important to speak their truth. And every day I meet people who, because of society, are just walking with that facade because they feel that it is the way to be. And in Real Stories, I want people to know the real story behind the facade. And that is why I do what I do.
Hi, this is Real Stories, and I'm your host, Tanya the Communication Doctor. And today on my show, I am joined with Dion Johnson. And Dion Johnson is a womanologist. I just love saying that, Dion, a womanologist. What is a womanologist?
Well, it's somebody who's really passionate and studious about understanding women. And that's really the bottom line. It's what it says on the tin, really. I remember having a conversation with several of my clients and they would say, you know, it doesn't really matter what I come to you with, like my clients are women in senior leadership and they come because they've got a conflict at work, or they for some reason they just need to, you know, sort some through some things or work through some challenges from work. But they always say that when they come, what really gets healed is their inner woman.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And so, what I really understand is that's my place in the world alongside womanity, I like to say, alongside women who are going through challenging processes and painful processes. That's where I come. Working with women who are going through change, challenging processes. That's where I belong in the world. And so that's the term womanologist has really come out of my comments that I've received from my clients, really.
You know what? I love that. When you let something organically grow in that way, it's always true. It's true to self, then, isn't it? So how did you become this go-to woman for the womanologist?
It's really powerful what you just said about letting things grow organically, because honestly, sometimes I'm, you know, I've just released a book, and the woman that I recognize myself to be through the process of writing the book, I think, wow, like, how did I get here? This morning I was thinking about it, that I've written three books now. The first one was an ebook that I just gave away for free in my early days. Second one was a self-published book. I have that book, and I was looking at it this morning. But the thing about that book is that I didn't show it to anyone. I probably sold about 300 copies, took it to speaking engagements when I went to speak, but I never showed it to anyone. I never talked about it on social media. I never showed it to anyone.
What was it called? What was it called, my love?
That one was called Fed Up of Being Fed Up at Work.
Oh, I love that.
A must-have resource for people who wake up on Monday morning wishing it was Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
And, I just didn't show it to anyone. And so I looked at the two books side by side, my book that I wrote back in 2013 and the book that I've just written. I've looked at them both side by side and thought, wow, like, the woman that wrote that first book is not the woman that wrote this book. I'm different. And I think that, I think it's all about the process, and that life and leadership and work are invitations to be processed, to grow, to evolve. And so often the very things that are involved with growing through those places in our lives, we're the blockers to the process of our own evolution.
Of course, no, totally.
So I really think that life and everything that we do in life is all about helping us to grow, and it's about how we yield to that, how we give ourselves over to that rather than blocking the process. That I've really been thinking about this morning.
You know what, it's lovely that you have been thinking about it, because as I said, I asked you the question, how did you become that woman? I love the fact that you've said you've gone through that process. Mm-hmm. And I love the whole changeable energy as well, because I think that's really important, that we don't, as women, we grow, we evolve. And as humans, we evolve, not just women, as humans, we evolve and we grow. And sometimes I hate having this whole thing where you, when people say you have to be this or you have to be that, because we're all various different things. Now, just give me the title of your book again, because I love the whole way that it was advertised in terms of the I am. I spoke a little bit about it before we went on the podcast. So just give me the name of the book again, please, that you are now advertising, that you've now self-published.
The book's called Influential Woman.
Yes.
And the subtitle is A Fresh Approach for Tackling Inequalities and Leading Change at Work.
You see, that the fresh approach to tackling inequality, for me, it hits, you know, that's the hitting point. Because tackling inequality and at work is quite a hard subject. So I want to go deep, because this is real stories, and I want to understand what inequality you experienced yourself at work to lead you to this point, yeah? Because normally when we shout about something, or when justice is important to us, it normally comes back to our own experiences or what we've experienced as humans. So could you just take me on that journey and go back and tell me that story as the inequality that you may experience at your workplace?
Yeah. I love to say when people ask me about myself that I am a woman in a man's world.
Mm.
I'm a black woman in a white man's world.
Mm.
I am a Christian in a secular and religion-phobic world.
Mm.
And I am facially different in a beauty-obsessed world.
Mm. Really,
so these are things that I've discovered throughout my processing, that I used to really believe that these things were kind of black marks against my name, if you like. They were reasons why I wouldn't, despite my gut knowing that I was called to do something really important in changing the world and tackling problems in the world, that I never really thought that I could be taken seriously or credibly, or, you know, that what I would think or what I would have to say would be thought of or deemed important enough, like white people or like white men, for example, or like people that work in high leadership. I just didn't see myself like that.
Mm.
And that caused inner turmoil, because on the inside, deep down, I knew I was great, knew I am great, knew that I am called to do great things, but there was all of this other contradicting belief, my beliefs that I held simultaneously along with the notion of greatness. Simultaneously, I held on to some beliefs that said, you know, people like you don't lead in high places. People like you don't get to have their voices heard or being taken seriously. And those messages came from somewhere, you know, those messages that helped me to form that opinion of myself. Nobody helped me form the opinion of myself, but those messages came from somewhere. And so through my growing up as a woman and as a leader and as a change maker, I've realized that I've had to do the work, I've had to be delving into that work. As my aspirations to impact the world grows, so I've had to deal with the things that are inside of me that hold me back from being that influential voice.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the process that I've been writing about for a while now.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I want to delve even deeper. So what are those things that have been holding back? So obviously the voices in your head, but what are the experiences as somebody in terms of, you talked about the other side, okay, so how it's impacted you, but what actually happened? What happened?
I could talk about each one of those things. I'm a woman, I am black, I am facially disfigured, I am a Christian. You know, I could talk about each one of those at length. But I'll start with this. I was born with a facial disfigurement.
Yeah.
I was born with a facial disfigurement. And when I was 4 years old, I was gifted with an artificial eye and really dark glasses. I mean, really dark. And the aim of these really dark glasses and this artificial eye was to cover my disfigured face. Mm. It was to hide my facial flaws, yeah, and to help me to look more normal. Like it was helping me to blend in, not to stand out so much. Yeah. And what I learned through that process in my child mind, my four-year-old mind, and subsequently, was that when something's not normal about you, or when something's broken, or something doesn't look right, or something doesn't sound right, or it sounds different, when you're different in a bad way, then what you have to do is you have to really keep that thing from view. You have to hide that thing. You have to put it away. You have to make sure that nobody sees it. Mm. And so when I was 4 years old, being gifted these cover-ups, this mask, was my education about what you do when things aren't normal.
Yeah.
And I grew up with that knowing. I grew up with the unconscious knowing that that there was something wrong with me, and that it needed to be hidden, that I needed to be hidden. And so that was, you know, my face taught me that, but also society taught me that, because there was all these messages about Black people, and there was all these messages about, I wasn't a Christian when I was young, I became a Christian later on in life, but there was just all of these messages around me, all the way around, that I spoke to myself, and that I saw being spoken to me in the world, that told me about my not enoughness, and I believed it, I didn't challenge it. Up until, I feel like telling you about something that happened to me a while back, maybe around the 2013s, 14s time.
Yeah.
I had a Facebook associate. And she wrote a book. And it was about Black and white women, the relationship between Black and white women.
Mm.
And she was really angry.
Yeah. Mm.
She was really angry. And so in the promotion of the book and the book's release, and then subsequently talking to the topics of the book, I really didn't like her approach.
Yeah.
I really didn't like the sound that she was making. I thought she was just plain aggressive and rude. I was fascinated by the topic, and she had some really powerful thoughts. Mm. But I just thought, I don't reckon, you know, she asked me to endorse one of her posts, and I didn't want to, because I didn't like the sound of it.
Yeah.
So I remember really being in turmoil around this and thinking, you know, what do I do? I offered support. Now she's asking for it, but I don't want to give it because I don't like her sound. I don't like her tone. Anyway, we had this conversation and decided that we would just kind of go our separate ways. We weren't on the same page anymore. And but that wasn't the end of it for me.
Okay.
What happened was, I kept thinking, I know I don't feel like she does, but I don't know what I do feel about being Black. I don't know what I do feel about being a Black woman. I don't know what I do feel about my relationship with white people. I don't know what I do feel about my relationship with white women. Mm. And it became like niggling. You know how when it's time for you to sort something out in your life, or to get a clearer revelation of something about yourself, you know how something, it often starts with a niggle. It often starts with something, you know, frustration. It feels like pain. It feels like conflict. It feels like angst.
Yeah. I'm totally with you there. I can totally identify with that kind of, it's like a gut-wrenching feeling, because I want to share something with you as you're saying that, because it's interesting. With regards to the woman, I didn't ask you if it was a Black or white woman, but it didn't actually matter really. But the fact that you say there was some things that you didn't agree with, because we all interpret different things differently depending on where we've brought up, what our experience is.
Yeah.
So, and as women, as we're women, you know, but there obviously is, there's a Black and white, there is a difference, you know, in terms of, I don't like divisive behavior, but I always say I'm a humanist, but I'm also a realist, you know, and you can be both of those things in terms of seeing what's happening in the world, and not being kind of seeing it in the shadow, but like you're saying, you're having these feelings when you're starting to feel.
I didn't know what I felt. I didn't know what I felt. I didn't know how I felt. Yeah. I felt numb. Okay. I didn't have any feelings. And so I, you know, it was bothering me.
Yeah.
And I, And I really wanted to know. So I prayed a prayer. I said, God, you know, please just help me to, what am I thinking about? Like, what do I think? What do I feel about this? And and so a little while after that prayer, one night I went to my bed and had this dream. And in the dream, I was in a jail cell.
Oh, wow.
And it was like black and white. It's like a dungeon, a black and white dungeon. And I was in the corner of the cell, cold and hungry and, you know, just withering in the jail cell. And I could hear the footsteps of this big-bellied jailer that was walking up and down the corridor. He was jangling the keys. He had the keys to the jail and he was jangling them around. He was walking and he got to my jail cell and I was looking at him and he had a great big beer belly, this big white man with big hat, like a sheriff's uniform on. And he had all this belt with all these keys and he was jangling the keys to my cell in his hands. And, you know, I said to him in the dream, I said to him, I want to get out of here. I want to go over there. And I pointed out the window, and out the window, over the hills, we could see that it wasn't black and white like in the jail cell, it was full colour.
Beautiful.
And there was this palace, and or castle, it was a castle, and in the castle there was a ball, and there was merriment, and opulence, and food, and drink, and dancing, and laughing, and women in beautiful gowns, and it was just all very beautiful over there. And I remember saying to the guy my jailer in the dream, I want to go over there. And he said, he looked at me really like with disgust actually, and he opened the jail cell and he said, I'll let you out of here, he said, but I'll be damned if I'm going to let you go in there.
Oh, wow.
And I woke up.
Wow, that's a really powerful dream, Dion. Yeah. And just as you're saying that, it kind of sounds like a fairy tale, but it's interesting when we look at dreams because they can be visions, they can also be anxiety, they could be a number of things, isn't it, when associations, when we have dreams about certain things.
For me, God really speaks to me through dreams. I hear from the divine through my dreams.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Not so it's every dream, because like you said, some dreams you just ate too late before you went to bed.
I've got a brilliant dream book and it talks about the analogy, so I love all of that. But that's why I had to ask you that question. What do you feel that was an anxiety or do you feel beneath that was a vision? Was a vision? I had a vision. You'd always say that, you know, like, I had a vision and he'd sit down and tell you the story and it'd always sound like a bit of a fairy tale. But sometimes they could be really powerful stories. So
I became clear that it became answer to prayer for me to understand what was going on for me around this race issue that had been brought up by this woman's book.
Brilliant.
And this woman's attitude. So what I saw was deep down that I had this belief that white people had, white men in particular, held the keys to my destiny. Mm. Like white people, white men in particular, were able to tell me who I could and couldn't be, where I could and couldn't go, what I could and couldn't accomplish. Mm. Like white people held the keys to my life and my destiny, and they could hold me bound or they could let me free, and it was their decision. And this came to me and I was horrified. But as I started to realize that this was showing me my own thoughts, because you know, you don't always know what you think.
Yeah.
You don't always know what you believe.
Mm.
But you know, through processes, we learn to see, if we want to, what we're truly believing. And I saw that what I was truly believing, that white people had power and I, as a black woman, had none. And so I made up my mind right there and then that I was going to, you know, have to heal. But what happened was when I made up my mind to really embrace this hidden belief system, that's when I got in touch with all of this rage. I was like proper rage, just disgust with white people, just hate.
Oh, wow.
And just upset, just real pain around why I personally and my people collectively would be treated like this by people. I really came into touch with my rage. which was amazing because I didn't know I had it. Yeah. And it was in there. It was in there, locked up in my DNA, not expressing itself consciously. But I could see retrospectively how it had been showing up in my life, really without my knowing it. And so now it was manifesting and I was able to make a decision that, okay, I've got some healing to do in this area.
Yeah.
And once you acknowledge it and you can see it and you can acknowledge it, now you have this opportunity to be able to heal, choose to heal, choose to forgive, choose to love, choose to go through and change, alchemize this rage into powerful love and powerful purpose and powerful mission.
This is what
I've been going through.
You said a key thing there in being able to alchemize this rage and to heal. Because I mean, that's what I'm all about. Those two things for me are key because, and you mentioned that, you know, that you've mentioned it, that lovely story in terms of white people having the power. But I suppose if you look deeper, it's not so white, it's the gatekeepers. Do you know what I mean? It's those particular white people who are the gatekeepers. And, you know, systematically, it's a system which I feel on a deep level as, you know, has affected us so deeply. There's so much transgenerational trauma within our community. And as you said, as a woman, there's layers because as a man, there's a layer, and as a woman, there's another layer. And as a woman with a facial dysphoria, you know, there's all layers and layers and layers and layers within that. And that caused so much pain. But I love the fact that you have come to this revelation, or you got to that point of recognizing that you had to alchemize and heal, because I think that's really important for us as people right now, because I felt anger and rage as well, and I think it's a really good thing to go through. It's either you're going to go through it and it's going to be negative, or you're going to go through the anger and rage and it's like you're going to come up and you're going to be like, okay, now is the action point, now I'm going to take action, now I'm going to stand up for myself, now I am going to that castle.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to knock on that door as loud as I can until you let me in, you know. And
the issue is that it's really it's really hard to see yourself.
Of course.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
I know from my years of wearing masks that when I decided that I was going to unmask my face and let you see my face for real, that was really the beginning of my learning journey around how we hide ourselves, how this dilemma that we have where we just really, really want to, as human beings, want to be seen and heard and taken seriously and loved anyway. This, you know, seen for real and loved anyway.
Yes, of course.
And
of
then
course.
And then on the other side, we're petrified, I mean, to terror of being seen. And so there's this kind of dilemma that we have. And being seen and seeing ourselves is traumatic and painful for a lot of us. It's hard to really look at. So, you know, it's really it's a process in and of itself to want to journey to the truth and accepting it all, you know, the good, the bad and the ugly. It's a real decision, it's a real process to get to the place where you say, you know, I want to know who I am, I want to know what I think, I want to know what I feel, I want to face my good, my bad, my ugly. I mean, facing our good is a challenge. Like, some, especially as women, we find it really hard to embrace the great things about ourselves.
Yes.
And we find it really hard to embrace the ugly about ourselves. So we kind of just sit in this sort of not paying attention, trance-like place of trying to be who everybody wants us to be. You know, trying to wear this hat over here and this face over there and be like that over here and be like this over here. It's so complicated. It's so exhausting.
You know, as you said that, something came to my mind as you just said, you know, having to face the good, the bad and the ugly. And I'm going to use that word ugly because within the Black community, and when I say ugly, I don't mean it in the sense of just kind of aesthetic. I mean it in the sense of our emotions, our feelings. There's a real problem with regards to mental health within our community.
Yeah.
There's so much different layers. And really and truly, I don't feel that we talk enough or we open enough about how we are. And as I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, my God, you've gone through so much, right? And you show up and you're presenting to the world and you're a change maker. You're a leader, you know, you're a coach. You are all of those things. Yeah. And in my mind, I look at you, Dion, and I've watched you on social media and I think, my God, I see you as a very powerful woman. Yeah. And when I say powerful, I mean energetically, because there's some, for me, power doesn't mean that you've got X amount of money in the bank or you're a celebrity or thing. That for me, I mean, when I see you, I think you are a powerful woman. Yeah. And part of your power is that you're not afraid to go to the good, the bad and the ugly. And within our community as Black women, we do like to show up as the good, the success. And it always has to be okay. You know, sometimes we even put our children, some people put their children and say, oh, my child's going to do this. My child's going to be a doctor. My child's going to be a lawyer. My child, I mean, I had all of that. I went for that because I was a creative. So, you know, I got written off when I was young anyway. So, and I've always felt like I've had to prove myself as a creative within a Black woman as well, because I went to a very, you know, prestigious university, but yeah, I felt I had to prove myself as a Black woman because it's almost like you're looked down upon as a creative, and then you have to step, because you're not going to be the, and when I became a teacher, oh, thank the Lord, she's got a proper job, but it's but why should we have to go for that? Why can't we just accept each other and embrace each other in everything that we do? I want to ask you about the ugly. I want to ask you about your feelings on that in terms of, as a Black woman, addressing the ugly. Have you had that experience, or can you talk openly about that for me?
First of all, we've all got ugly. I used to believe that it was only Black people that ugly. Actually, there's ugly. I sit with brilliant women from all backgrounds, and we all have ugly. So that's a very important. It was very important for me to understand that, because I kept looking for what it was that made them different, and it's there too. So
yeah, of
course. But, you know, in terms of facing my ugly, I have to tell you that this is a faith journey for me, because my ugly made me sick. The awareness of ugly, even when I wasn't willing to look at it, made me an angry, insecure, intimidated, fake confident, aggressive human being. Like that's just how I was. When I look back at me back then, that's how I was. And then I had an encounter with God, and I begin to study the Bible, and I begin to follow Jesus, and I begin to seek spiritual insights to challenge my own thinking about my own self. And this is what's changed everything for me. It's been a game changer, because what happened was, when I had this encounter back in the early 2000s, I was a grown woman with a life that looked like any life, anybody's life would look if they were so angry and bitter and you know, just ugly. Anybody with that kind of ugliness is going to produce ugliness on the outside. I feel like sticking a pin here and just telling you that I used to be a midwife, right? And I remember I used to work in a really, really deprived part of London. So my clients were really on the breadline, like really on the poverty line.
Where was that?
Southeast London.
So
I worked, what part of my patch was an estate that was really run down, and the people were run down, and the estate was run down. It was all very quite run down. I remember them, the council, knocking down the estate, just knocking it down and rebuilding these beautiful homes these beautiful, I mean, they were beautiful townhouses. They looked like they would belong in any, they looked like belong in the city, you know, they belonged in you know, Chelsea and Westminster or whatever. Mm. They were beautiful townhouses, but they put the same people back in these beautiful townhouses. Now, because I was a community midwife, I had occasion to keep, to be visiting the families that lived in these beautiful homes. Mm. And what I saw was, within a year, the inside of those homes were broken down,
yeah,
were run down, were ugly.
Thank you, Dion. That's so interesting. I suppose what you're saying here is, you know, to fix your ugly from the inside to allow yourself to shine. And I'm so sorry, we've spoken for such a long time here that I'm going to have to bring this to a close right now. But you've just had so much richness in what you've said, and you've been through so much. And I love this whole idea. I love the womanology. I love your biography. I love what you're doing. And as I said, I feel that you're a change maker and a powerhouse woman. And thank you for coming on the show today. And thank you for being on my podcast. So I'd just like to say, from Tanya the Communication Doctor and from Dion Johnson, adios. There is so much to take away from this show, and I want to start with this idea of being the womanologist and being the powerhouse. What I got from Dion is there's such deep reflection and deep resilience in everything that she does. And I do feel that with this resilience and reflection, that she's kept striving to get that key to the castle so she can explore the opportunities that she's entitled to as a woman, not just a black woman, but as a woman. And there is just so much richness there with the journey and the pain and the suffering that she has had to go through. But yet she still stands strong and is comfortable in her skin and is comfortable with herself as a woman. So I want to say thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you would like to learn more, please visit our website at communicationdoctor.co.uk. To listen to more real stories, don't forget to subscribe.